and welcome to The Signal. We're here live on CKDU 88.1, bringing you new and interesting stories from around Halifax. I'm Chloe Hannon.
And I'm Casey Jordan. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
You can also check us out on The Signal, a Halifax podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud.
Today on the show, Raisa Alibi reminds us that you don't need to drink your morning coffee all alone.
I think I come just for like the micro-adventure and getting out of bed in the morning and going for a bike ride.
And Meg Campbell shows us how this group is preserving their language through weekly classes.
My family were all Gaelic speakers at my grandparents' level. And I remember it growing up, hearing it, but not knowing anything about it.
Plus, later, Noor Hafid tells us how some people are trying to make those tough financial conversations a little easier.
You don't really think about financial literacy until you have to.
All that and more on today's show. But first...
Many Nova Scotians are getting their flu vaccine this fall. But a retired doctor says we need more information to understand its long-term benefits. I spoke with him this week. Here's what I found. Sasha Mullins lives in Halifax. She got her flu vaccine this week. She's getting her shot because her partner has Crohn's disease. His medication weakens his immune system.
For us, it is important to get, you know, the COVID vaccine, the flu vaccine, any vaccine that would help protect him against getting sick. It just helps protect everyone else as well as myself.
That's a big part of the public health message on flu vaccines.
Getting vaccinated is an important step to helping protect our whole community.
That's Dr. Robert Strang, the Chief Medical Officer of Health at the province's annual flu vaccine rollout last month. The vaccine is free to everyone 6 months or older, a way to encourage uptake. But one doctor is questioning how much we know about the benefits.
Were people who accepted the flu vaccine every year for the last 20 years overall healthier or sicker compared to those who don't?
Dr. David Zittner is a retired family doctor and the founding director of Dalhousie's graduate program in health informatics. He says the vaccine is good at fighting the flu, but we still don't know if it makes you more or less likely to be healthy later in life.
There's really very little compelling evidence showing that overall you're better off if you receive an annual flu vaccine or if you don't.
Zittner says provincial health authorities might be able to answer that question.
In Canada, almost everyone who's covered by provincial health insurance gives government information about their health. As a routine, government has information about every visit that you've made, and they know about your general circumstance, including the other determinants of health.
He says that data could be used to study the long-term effects of flu vaccine. Zittner also chairs the Healthcare Policy Committee for CURAC, a national board of retired university professors. In June, they released a paper calling on health regulators to make this routine data available. He says it could begin to show researchers what link exists between flu vaccination and overall health.
You'd want to know whether people who get annual flu vaccine for the last 20 years have had more hospitalizations or fewer hospitalizations compared to those who don't.
But the province hasn't given up the data. Health officials tell Zittner it's too difficult. Still, the Department of Health and Wellness maintains the flu vaccine is worthwhile and effective. Its media advisor declined an interview, but said in a statement that, quote, people who are vaccinated are better protected against spreading the illness, becoming severely ill, and experiencing complications, hospitalization, and death. But Zittner says that assurance would mean more for people like Sasha Mullins if the data was available to back it up.
Thanks, Casey. Thursday mornings are different for a group of cyclists in Halifax. They're up early, they're outside, and they're drinking coffee together. Raisa Alibi explains why.
Where you print out whatever is black.
I work remote and I get up close to 9 a.m. almost every day, so it's a nice reason to get up early and go for a bike ride.
Jacob Golden is part of the group of people that meets for coffee outside at 7 o'clock on Thursday mornings. It's called coffee outside. Every week, the group moves to a different park in Halifax or Dartmouth.
The goal is people who work at 9 can get to their job.
From New Zealand to Colombia, there are groups drinking coffee outside all over the world. It started for the community of cyclists, but the group in Halifax welcomes everyone. Russ Roca appreciates the coffee outside groups because it connects him to other cyclists. He looks for the groups everywhere he travels. And now it has another meaning.
Coffee outside, especially in post-COVID, just a nice way to actually meet people IRL and connect without having like the interface of the screen.
Today, meeting IRL or in real life can be a luxury.
As much as technology has connected us, it's also separated us. It can reach more people, but the relationships are very shallow and impersonal.
Justin Kruger leads Project Helping, an American organization to make volunteering more accessible. He says it also brings people together. And that's not always easy since the pandemic.
A lot of that has been, by force or by choice, taken away. And so we have to create accessible, fun, meaningful ways for people to build those connections again into their lives.
12 years ago, Kruger struggled with his mental health. He says that's when he realized that volunteering his time and being around other people was therapeutic.
We are hardwired as human beings to be part of a group, part of a tribe, part of a social community.
M. Cook and Joshua Drexler have been drinking coffee outside in Halifax for the past 2 years.
I think I come just for like the micro adventure and getting out of bed in the morning and going for a bike ride.
It's just cool to come out and chat in the mornings and have a little bit of social time.
It's not just about cycling and coffee. It's also about community. For The Signal, I'm Raisa Alibi in Halifax.
One organization is initiating the Gaelic revival in Halifax by offering language classes where locals are reconnecting with their culture. Meg Campbell has more.
A handful of individuals is gathered at Citadel High School. It's a regular meeting of an intermediate Gaelic class. These classes are organized by the Gaelic Language Society of Halifax. They actively work to keep the language alive. For students like Shalane Hansen, being here allows her to breathe new life into a familial language.
My family were all Gaelic speakers at my grandparents' level. And I remember it growing up, hearing it, but not knowing anything about it. And I'm trying to work towards fluency, just to be able to bring that language back into our family.
The Society has support from the province for classes. Lewis McKinnon is with the Provincial Department of Gaelic Affairs. He stresses the significance of revitalizing a nearly forgotten language.
In the case of Gaelic in Nova Scotia, we need to speak about Gaelic in the context of its cultural presence, its cultural expression. The two are intimately intertwined. And I think maintaining Gaelic is central to people's connection to their people, to their sense of belonging and community, and profound level, I would say, to their identity.
Gaelic is associated with Scottish culture on Cape Breton Island, but interest in learning the language is expanding in Halifax. Mike Campbell is a student who attends the weekly classes. He's also on the board of the Gaelic Language Society.
Gaelic is a beautiful language. It's one of Europe's oldest languages. It's full of life and poetry. It's growing here. A lot of people likely don't think about Gaelic, that it's out there and alive even within the city of Halifax, but it is.
There are 4 Gaelic classes meeting in Halifax, 3 of them online. You can get more information at the Society's website. Our son on Tangle is Misha Meg Campbell, Ounce na Arshvala.
What did she say?
I think she signed off in Gaelic.
Oh, cool. You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
You can also hear us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast. I'm Casey Jordan.
And I'm Chloe Hannon. Still to come on the show, Sarah Drysdale tells us why the rock and roll scene is better when the kids are involved.
It'll be beneficial not only to you and to them, but to the scene in general.
But life is not always fun. For families with neurodivergent children, it can be hard.
Everything being so hard, it's exhausting.
We'll hear about a unique fundraiser aimed at making life easier for those families.
It's back! One of the most popular book and movie franchises makes a comeback this weekend. The Hunger Games, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, will be taking us back to Panem. Warren De Silva reports.
Your role is to turn these children into spectacles, not survivors.
Five, four,
enjoy the show.
Three, two,
enjoy the show.
Run.
Enjoy the show.
There's a big pre-release buzz about the latest Hunger Games installment. It's being released in theaters today. Megan Chestnut is a student who first read the books in the fifth grade and then watched the first movies with her mom.
I'm super excited. I think me and my friends are going to go see it like a couple days after it opens or something.
Carsten Knox is the host of the CBC Radio film review column, Knox Office. He says it's a comeback for the franchise that was a cultural phenomenon.
It feels like a genre, a subgenre, that is resurgent. You know, a number of years ago, 10 or more years ago, The Hunger Games launched.
Knox says even people in their 20s can still have nostalgia for things they loved as a kid.
The prequels keep getting made, the origins of the villains keep getting told, and as long as people keep going to see them, then, you know, the lessons will be learned. Okay, we need to make more of these, because this is what people want.
Mika Kadares is a Hunger Games super fan. She says the adaptation of Suzanne Collins' book is a reflection of modern society.
There is such an emphasis on fashion within the Hunger Games. There is a commentary on what I think general the beauty industry and beauty standards Suzanne Collins is parodying. All of the tributes are 18 and younger, and that they are being used as props, essentially, in order to be shown as beautiful figures.
See how quickly we become predator? See how quickly civilization disappears?
Natalia Tola is another Hunger Games superfan. She says she always identified with the female characters.
You know, I think for me, like as a young woman, like seeing like another woman, you know, a fictional character, like engaged so deeply with nature, really, really spoke to me.
Taking a well-loved book and making it into a movie is risky, especially when people like Megan Chestnut have grown up loving the characters.
Just like the communal aspect, I think, of just like reading something that everyone else was like reading and talking about was fun.
Meanwhile, Knox says it could be the beginning of a trend.
Teen dystopia, post-apocalyptic genre, all of the genre really took off. It didn't stick around. So it's interesting to see that they've decided to try to bring it back with this prequel.
Now, the question is whether this prequel will live up to its hype. For The Signal, I'm Warren De Silva in Halifax.
Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree.
The Hollywood film and TV scene is trying to get back to normal after strikes by the American Writers and Actors Unions. And it's all had a surprising impact on Nova Scotia's film and television industry. Amy Fisk explains.
It's been a long 118 days for striking American actors, but it's also been stressful for the film and TV business in Nova Scotia. Chris Cuthbertson says there were American productions shooting in Nova Scotia that had to be paused. He's the regional president of the Alliance of Canadian Cinema, Television, and Radio.
For shows that would film here, that were American shows that had writers that worked under the Writers Guild of America and had SAG-AFTRA actors, those shows couldn't film, they couldn't proceed. And some of the shows are very popular, and it's just the time it takes for things to be resolved with the strike for them to be able to come back.
Sean Morris Ross has worked with the union representing actors in Canada for 25 years. She says on the upside, that made more room for Canadian productions.
We had far more local productions with, you know, performers from Canada, because most of our productions that kept on happening after the strike started were more local. They were Canadian.
She says the industry in Nova Scotia is better than it's been in a decade. Cuthbertson agrees, pointing out how much actors have been working with their own projects.
We were very busy with local productions, so much so that so many of our actors have been working and so many of our actors have been creating. We've had so many projects. Even now, I think we have 24 projects that are being made that are all being made by our members, you know, and then are all local productions and everything. We've been working on building this industry and making it bigger and better all the time.
It's a relief for an industry that's had a lot of setbacks in the last few years. COVID lockdown had shut down many film sets. Before that, in 2015, the provincial government of the time took away a tax credit that supported foreign production in the province. The end of the U.S. actors' strike seems to be lifting the curtain on a more optimistic time in Nova Scotia's film and TV industry.
For us, now that things are resolved with both of the strikes almost completely, this is a wonderful time for us, and for what little we know so far, great for shows to be able to return now, and shows that have filmed other seasons here before that are willing, wanting, and able to come back. We optimistically and enthusiastically are expecting them to film sometime. Yeah.
Amy Fisk for The Signal, Halifax.
The music community in Halifax is thriving, if you're 19 or older. Music events that include underage bands are harder to come by. Some are calling for more accessible venues and more encouragement for young musicians. Sarah Drysdale has more.
The recent Battle of the Bands at the Lighthouse Arts Center was an opportunity for people of all ages to enjoy punk and metal music. But it's a rather rare opportunity, says Lucas Gowdy. He works at Radstorm, an all-ages space where musicians come to practice and record. He says there are very few places for those musicians to perform.
I think seeing music when you're young is extremely important and informative, and I think that cultural spaces where you can see music cheaply have basically been annexed by bars.
He also says that louder bands, like punk and metal acts, have a hard time finding a space to let them play.
I imagine at least it's easier to convince some cafe owner, whoever, to let your, whatever, like a folk duo play in their space than it would be to get a thrash metal band.
CJ Hill is on the board at the Lighthouse Arts Center. He's also involved in the all-ages punk scene in Halifax. He says it's important to make more space for it.
As a general person, if you don't get to see it, then you don't believe it. So if we don't support all-ages music, if we don't support these youth that are coming up and actually trying and putting in the work and doing it, then it all falls apart.
All-ages events allow musicians to get performing experience. Convulsion, a teenage punk group, won the latest Battle of the Bands. They will be advancing to the next round. Convulsion's guitarist, Hayden Murgatroyd, says it's really exciting.
I just didn't think that we'd be on the stage in front of this many people in this professional of a place, so it was pretty awesome. It was pretty surreal.
Hill says it would be great to get funding for all-ages venues from government or music funding bodies. But for now, he wants to see young musicians be mentored by more experienced artists.
I called on bands to include youth artists on their shows, like make it work, do the extra work, because it'll be beneficial not only to you and to them, but to the scene in general.
He says that's what builds a path to a richer music scene for all. Meanwhile, Convulsion's bandmates say they're excited to be moving on to the Battle of the Bands semifinals in the new year. For The Signal, Sarah Drysdale, Halifax.
What's up, Halifax? There's a lot going on this weekend. A Christmas parade, a DIY studio, job fairs. We're here to fill you in.
Even the weather is looking to be in our favor this weekend, so get out and enjoy it.
I know I'll be getting outside for the 28th annual Holiday Parade of Lights.
Good start. It always puts me in the Christmas spirit, and I'm not alone.
Love the, I don't know, the Christmas spirit and seeing everybody's so happy, and I love the lights, and it's just a good time.
As soon as November 11th stops, once it's gone, that's when Christmas begins for me.
There's such a great turnout every year.
Definitely. It's happening Saturday night at 6 p.m., but I recommend getting your spot on the sidewalk kind of early. It fills up fast.
Music, lights, a chance to see Santa Claus. I'm sold. Did you hear about the queer and trans play reading series at Neptune?
Yes, I did. It's allowing LGBTQ+ stories and artists to bring their work to the stage. Their last show is also Saturday night.
That leaves my Friday plan still up in the air. Got any ideas?
Well, Casey, if journalism doesn't work out for you, you can head to the Halifax Job Fair at the Convention Center to get some career ideas. The event is free for all job seekers, and there will be 40-plus companies to explore from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Well, it sounds like we have some things to look forward to this weekend.
It sure does. And I think that about covers it.
Thanks, Chloe.
You know, when people start talking about debt or bills or taxes, my stress levels kind of spike. But apparently, money matters don't have to be taxing. Nora Hafid talked to some people who are trying to help.
From credit cards to taxes, many young people struggle to understand financial concepts.
Understand them not in any significant capacity.
Taxes, I'm not entirely certain on.
November is Financial Literacy Month in Canada. And according to a 2022 public opinion survey, only one in five young Canadians feel financially literate. Greg Hepp teaches an introduction to finance class at Dalhousie University. He thinks it's important for everyone to be financially literate.
Basically, the skills necessary, the financial skills necessary to be successful in life and planning for things such as buying a house, retiring, putting your kids through university, and things of that nature.
Hepp says he wants to make financial knowledge accessible to all young people, not just finance majors. That's why he's creating a course focused on practical financial skills, designed for students in other majors with no prior knowledge.
We'll be really practical, but it's really going to be about how do you develop a budget? How do taxes work? How do you plan? Why is it important to start planning for retirement now and not in 10 or 20 years?
He's not the only one offering this kind of advice. Caroline Goodwin is with the Chartered Professional Accountants of Canada, better known as CPA Canada. She manages their financial literacy program.
We have a team that produces financial literacy products for all peoples of Canada. Whether you're a student in high school, post-secondary, right up to adults and seniors, we have many programs available for you.
The CPA teams host free sessions with topics tailored to each group.
And our topics cover things like in lower elementary school, you know, what it means to have a pet, how much it costs to have a pet. For high school, we do credit card introduction, budgeting. And for post-secondary schools, we talk about how to save your money, how to manage your money while you're in school.
Goodwin says she's not surprised only one in five young Canadians feel financially literate. On the other four, they're stressed.
I think I'll probably always worry about money, whether I have $1 in the bank or a million.
I spend a decent amount of time worrying about it.
But financial education doesn't stop there. Family can be helpful too. Kaylee Bogart is a third-year student at the University of King's College. She says she always turns to her older sister and father for financial advice.
It's kind of like cross-checking with somebody else to know that you're on the right path. But it's nice to just to ask someone, it's like, hey, is this a good investment to make?
Whether it's from a professional or a family member, financial advice is available. Money, money, money. For The Signal, I'm Nor Hafid.
Parenting isn't always about enforcing bedtimes and good nutrition. Sometimes it's more. For Steph McNamara, it's writing and staging a one-woman play. This week, she'll be doing just that. Andy Mullins tells us how that play is inviting us to talk about neurodivergence through art.
Well, it's just pretty indescribable, but today feels like, I don't know, just the beginning of Molly's reach.
Steph McNamara is reading a scene for her one-woman play. Acting is something she hasn't done in a decade. Now, she's reclaiming her theatrical self. This week, she'll be performing at Togetherland Art Gallery in Ingramport.
I guess like peeling back the curtain of a special needs family, because there's a lot of trying times.
Her Beautiful Brain is the name of the play. She says it's a memoir of her journey with Molly, her daughter. It weaves together monologues and voice memos.
Molly is throwing rocks into the river. And it's a beautiful morning. It's peaceful.
Molly's mother calls her a magical little wizard. At the age of 2, she was diagnosed with autism. McNamara says that as a result, most days contain a lot of polarity.
Molly is fascinating and hilarious. I like to say it's like the messy and the magic. There can be a lot of meltdowns, and that's just her response to being overwhelmed and overstimulated.
The play is meant to demonstrate what it's like to parent a neurodivergent child by pulling from McNamara's personal journal entries.
I don't know. I know we're lucky. I know we're grateful. But it just feels sometimes like, it just feels like too much.
McNamara says there's a growing recognition around neurodivergence, but that there is still a long way to go. She hopes to prompt conversations that encourage greater understanding and empathy. That's something she says she hasn't always encountered.
She was having a really hard meltdown, and I remember a parent coming up to me saying, like, you really need to get a hold of your kid.
McNamara says for families like hers, it can also be difficult to do something we all want to do, that is, going on vacation.
The thing is, with some family vacation, they're just super stimulating. So we thought, let's just build something.
The McNamaras are planning to open a retreat. The play, Her Beautiful Brain, is one way the family is raising funds for this project. Steph says it will be a quirky and magical spot, tucked away by a mountain in Cape Breton. They're calling it Molly's Reach Retreat.
We just thought to have that option as a vacation for parents to come with their kids.
There are a few similar places for neurodivergent people. Lisa Hicks Coaching has been running retreats in Ontario for 2 years.
Every time we have such beautiful growth and people walking away in tears because this was something that they didn't know that they needed.
Meanwhile, the McNamaras are working away in Cape Breton, preparing to build their first cabin next summer. Steph says she is a bit nervous for the play, but Molly has taught her the power of vulnerability.
And she's really helped me to feel brave. I honestly am looking forward to it. I know it'll be like a release, like this really beautiful release.
For The Signal, I'm Andy Mullins in Halifax.
That's our show for today. Thanks for tuning in to CKDU 88.1 FM.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter. Our handle is SignalHFX.
And we post our entire show on our website at signalhfx.ca.
Our show this week was produced by Ben Harris. Associate producer was Risa Alibi.
And a shout out to Mark Panino, our studio technician.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm KC Jordan.
And I'm Chloe Hannon. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with more stories.